What's up, everybody? What's up, everybody? Welcome to Unpaved. He's Sean Salisbury. I'm Adam Sager. Woo, we had some fun games last night. We had a close game in the second one. The first one was a shocker, you know, being new when we picked those games yesterday. We had it clear the Buffalo Bills were going to win. They did not. But before we get to the Monday Night Football games, let's recap our poll questions from yesterday and then the new one today. Yesterday, should James Franklin have been fired? Sean, we had the one, would you choose NFL or college for the rest of your life? That was 50.5 to 49.5, and I believe college won. Yesterday, should James Franklin have been fired by Penn State? Yes, won at 51%. No, had 49. So back-to-back poll questions where it split almost right down the middle. Right. I was a emphatic yes that he should have been fired. And it was kind of a topic that some don't think you can get better than James Franklin right now, or even after the season. So I feel like that's why the no was so high, but interesting that it was that close to me.
Yeah. Thanks. And I voted no. And here's why. We had similar conversation yesterday. Mine was more timing, not the person. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was more, hey man, do I really want to hire? Can you hear me through the headset, Sags? Just curious.
Yeah.
The computer. You got me? Okay. I was more, okay, what's to accomplish by doing this now for a guy who's been there this long? And, you know, you think, oh, does a little respect come into it? But then you think, no, because he's milked them for every dime. Every time a contract comes up, he threatens to leave. He does. So, you know, you got to get out of your – I try to get out of the football field, Sags, of a guy who's been cut, or watching buddies of mine in the coaching business after a few mistakes. The year before, their guy leads the nation in passing. The next year, we got to get rid of the guy because, you know, fire him. It just it drives me nuts. So I try to take that out of it. The truth of the matter is they need a new voice, and it was time. And I quite frankly think part of me looked at, even though he won't say it, because it looked to me like, as it was going on, that James Franklin had kind of checked out. Now, I'm not saying he's not a good coach, didn't want to be there, but there is this mental checkout. Even when you're physically there, sometimes you're not there. It felt like that. And his team was playing like it. So something was missing from that team, because they didn't get that bad that quick, but they did. So the poll question didn't surprise me, because I voted no on the timing part of it. But you made a good point that led me to think, if I would revote, I'd probably maybe say yes, but it was with one leg over on one side and one on the other, because, I mean, yes, they needed a new voice, but I felt like December would have been a good voice after the last game of the season. But, Segs, when you say, well, they're losing, they've lost four recruits. Then it hit me with the, okay, if it's Urban Meyer or whoever it is, or if you're going to try to steal one of these other guys who got a big buyout that's a really good coach, and or Cignetti or one of them, that you say, well, you know what, let them know now. Now, you couldn't if those guys were under contract, but in Urban Meyer, you could have said, here's your $15 million. Then recruits say, whoa, I'm not going to leave now because he's going to be my coach next year. So you could have got out in front of that part and just let them know, because we know the interim coach, even if they win four, is not keeping this job, folks. It's going to be a big job to somebody, because the alumni are going to demand it. So that's the only reason I said no, was the timing of it. But if you've lost your team, the truth is, Segs, and if you've checked out, you're doing a disservice to everybody. It was better they did it now. I was thinking more from the emotional side. But in truth, if I'm them, I'd bring him in, and I'll know in two sentences if he's kind of checked out on me. I probably already knew before the game. And if the team had checked out on him, you got to move on. Hope the interim coach can rally him a little bit. And if you're smart, and it is a guy who's not under contract, John Gruden, if it was, I'm just throwing names that you could go get, I would suggest that you announce it sooner than later and pay whatever it takes to pay and give him the autonomy to do everything he needs. You know why? Because those big-time recruits that are loyal or legacy or had Penn State on their mind forever are going to say, oh, yeah, Urban Meyer, John Gruden's coming. I'm going to wait this thing out until I get to meet with that coach. And then you're not losing them just because you're losing them. So, yes, should have won, Segs. As much as I hate to say it and see coaches get fired, you can't feel sorry for James Franklin. He didn't win enough big games, and it ultimately falls on the head coach. And secondly, there's 60 million reasons why he's going to be just fine. He ain't going to have to sell his house if he doesn't want it.
Yeah, and just to wrap this conversation up until we get more of a sense of who's being interviewed, what coaches are you trying to talk to, BetOnline put their odds up for the next Penn State head coach. Number one is Matt Rhule at plus 200. Then you have Joe Brady at plus 300, Fran Brown at +5, Kurt Cignetti at +6. And then your boy, Bill O'Brien at +7 to go back to Happy Valley. coached the Penn State.
Guess who's not there? Christian Hackenberg. Okay. And I like Christian. He had his best year ever under Bill as a freshman. Remember that Seg's going to be the first top five pick of the draft. Bill leaves and things in injury just didn't quite work out for Hackenberg. Okay. So at the top, real quick, give me those. I'm going to just give you a yes or no, Seg's.
Matt Rhule.
If I think that it's in consideration. Fair enough.
Yeah.
And if that opens up, you know what? People don't realize, Seg's, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but don't realize 20 years ago, you're at that age, you're kind of in the cutoff part, just how good Nebraska was years ago, right? Just what kind of blue blood dominant program. They don't remember that because Nebraska was Oklahoma, was Texas, and it was that group. And then they went through a tough time and they got it back. And, you know, when Turner Gill and Coach Osborne and Scott Frost, when they won that, and I can remember covering that game at the Orange Bowl when Frosty was the quarterback. And so there's an era that missed it. When you say Nebraska, hell yeah, you're leaving Nebraska for Penn State. Nebraska is a blue blood, phenomenal job if, in fact, you get it and you can – and they're giving you enough money to go get Raiola and get him to decommit from Georgia to go to Nebraska. So it's a good job. Matt Rhule, when you say should he be a candidate, the answer is yes. Who's number two?
Joe Brady.
Absolutely. Would
he go back from the NFL to college again? Or is he a guy that you think he's going to be up for head coaching jobs in the NFL?
You know what? Did I mean this affectionately? Thanks. He's pasty white, redheaded, looks like he belongs at Penn State. He does. He fits the, like when I think about my buddies that have played there, I said, oh, of course you went to Penn State. You know, there's certain looks that you get. I don't know why, and it's not fair, but you do. But in truth, and he'd be great. And boy, do they need a – but they've got – you know, the thing about it is their offensive coordinator is pretty damn good. Remember last year he was a genius, say, getting the ball to tight end, using – and this year they don't – the players aren't going well. It's like, oh, they're not any good. Well, he didn't forget how to coach. I think Brady's going to be – I'd say yes to Brady, but I think he's going to be a head coach in the NFL, Sigs. I think – somebody like Tennessee that needs quarterback upgrade right now with a guy like that, everywhere he's – look at Burrow and look at Josh Allen. That's all I'll say to you. And you tell me that the guy hasn't made a difference. I'm thinking he's going to go to the NFL, but I would interview him. Who's third?
Fran Brown.
Absolutely, yes. And there'll be a line for him. And they're familiar with his work at Syracuse. If he's doing that at Syracuse and going to reinstill discipline, Fran Brown – should get interviewed, and I'd interview him quickly. And they're familiar with him.
Yep. And then we have Kurt Cignetti.
Absolutely. But there's a gut part of me that I feel like this guy's going to see Indiana through, Segs. But we've said that a million times before. And if somebody offers him $10 million more in 5 years, what are you going to do, Segs? You know, $100 million instead of – because there's – but Indiana's doing something unique, Segs. I can't wait for the guy to say I'm not at a program that's not Oregon or Southern Cal that, yeah, Indiana's my dream job, and he lives it because I love him, and everywhere he goes, they win. But I'd interview him, Sigs, but do you believe he could withstand – Bill O'Brien's not getting this job, just so you know, that ain't happening. Do you believe that he can withstand the barrage if Penn State really wanted him? Could he turn – that down Northeast family in his blood and in his veins, could he turn it down?
I don't know. I mean, we've seen this from other coaches. You look at and the guy that immediately came to my mind was Matt Campbell. Remember, he was a hot candidate to go to the NFL. He was a hot candidate to get all these big jobs, and he just kind of stayed at Iowa State. He was having some success, and he stayed there. He's still there. He's been kind of mentioned about this Penn State job as well. But they just don't leave. And then it just never really works out. He never gets to that top level success.
They get close. Now, they get close. Yes. Yep.
Cignetti has Indiana there. And with the new 12 team playoff, they're going to get into the playoff.
They're better than Penn State, Sigs. Yes. It's just a question, can you sustain this if you're not going to give all the money, right? And recruiting, can you sustain and can this speed and his energy stay energy at Indiana? And they buy into it and it turns from a basketball program into a damn near. A football program that right now is better than the basketball program.
You just never know because it feels like when these coaches talk this talk of, no, I'm here to build this program to the top level, and especially when it's a school like Indiana, who's always been known as a basketball school. They've never been a football school. And
Duke, Kentucky, Indiana, Segs, right.
Yeah. Do you want to stay there and maybe have one, maybe a second season next year where you're really good too. And then you have kind of a little bit of a fall off, and then you have more of a fall off. Then you kind of middle around 500, maybe a couple games over, but you're never in that college football playoff talk again. And then people kind of start to forget about you. You just never know with these guys, because they, some of them talk out of one side of their mouth while the other side's talking to everybody else.
Yeah, they overload their mouth with their ass until somebody writes a bigger check. Now, I don't know if Cignetti's going to be that guy. Thanks. And I would love him to do it, but there's always that temptation. And you and I both know it. And it really comes down to how bad will Indiana want to keep it, because he's going to get talked to. And with the Joe Burrow thing, I mean, with the Joe Brady thing and Dr. J, and I think we've said this before, the match with Burrow and Brady was the greatest coordinator quarterback match we've seen in, well, maybe ever in college football. I would imagine if Zach Taylor doesn't make it through to the next season, Segs, that Joe Burrow would probably pine for Jamar Chase, because he was there at the same time, to pine for Brady to be the while it looks nice, Joe Brady doesn't have to recruit like he'd have to recruit at Penn State. He gets to say, you want to come play with this group? It's college football is tougher than the NFL right now, Segs. It just is, because of all the rules, the shit you got to deal with. I sense that Joe Brady's success will be next level, and Josh Allen will have to deal with another new coordinator, but next level stuff. And I think it'll be Sundays, not Saturdays.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, moving on to NFL and Monday Night Football. Our poll question today is, after a full weekend of college football and then NFL on Sunday, we have Thursday Night Football. Do you like having two Monday Night Football games like we did last night? So that's our poll question. And right now it's a resounding no with 72%. And I voted no. I think it's too much. I thought last night, I like Monday Night Football when it's a good matchup to be a standalone game. Having Josh Allen playing while Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels are playing on Monday night just doesn't feel right to me. So I'm a no to this question.
I was an emphatic no.
Yeah.
And it used to be when the schedule came out, Segs, for when I was playing, I didn't look at what you first look at is, are we playing on Thanksgiving?
Mm-hmm.
Are we playing on Monday night? You know, then Monday night was it, right? I mean, that was the thing. And are we playing Green Bay or Chicago in late December? We're just joking around, like, oh, hell, can we get them in our building late and get them early? Right. So you kind of joking around with that, but the two, and it was exclusive, and it was you, and you knew all your buddies were watching, all your peers. Now, by giving us more, I think you're getting less. I think people are like, yeah, I mean, you're muddying my waters. I got two TVs, but now I can't really focus in on what I want to. I don't like it. I understand it, but it no longer feels special. Monday Night Football now. Sundays are for all the games. That's when we get them all. You pick your favorite team, go to your favorite sports bar, do it at home, party it up. Mondays, everybody's watching those guys to say, this is your special time on a pedestal. Rookie quarterback, new head coach. We're giving you your moment. You ain't sharing it with anybody. Either fuck it up or seize it and go play with it. So I was an emphatic no. I think people, you know what? And Segs, this is going to sound crazy. I think we are too inundated right now with our attention spans. I think two football games on a Monday night, and especially, and they mixing in baseball that I got to watch, dude, because I ain't missing that stuff. I like these. I love the baseball postseason. You and I have talked about it. Other than hockey, it's the best one. So you're sitting there watching that. I don't think people's minds and their brains can handle it anymore. I don't think they want to. I think it's too much to decipher, especially if you're like doing what we do, or you're going to go up and do X's and O's and talk about, you got to go back and rewatch both. So you're saying, here's what I saw mechanically. Yeah. It's just too much. And we're in a society right now, we think more is good. Less is better when it comes to Monday night. And I hate it. And to answer Isaiah, and we'll get to these at 12:40, but I do want to make this point. So before we get too far along, is that you disagree? Nebraska's lost the blue blood status. You can never lose blue blood status. If Duke goes 15 straight years, they're still blue blood, because we've been talking about it forever. Kentucky. Now, they can be a bad blue blood team, but they're still blue. UCLA is still a blue blood basketball program. Wouldn't. But they've lost that blue blood because they ain't winning national championships. And Nebraska, while you're exactly right, it's not as prestigious and as, oh, wow. That's why I said to Segs, there's a group that doesn't realize who Nebraska was. They are blue blood, but they're blue blood that's not as watchable as it used to be. And they're trying to get it back there. So I'm not saying they are. And it's lost some of that panache that goes with, oh, look at us. They're no longer Oklahoma and Texas, and Matt's trying to get them back there. But make no mistake about it, that fan base in that city, they still look at Nebraska as a powerhouse from the past that they're trying to move forward. It's like the Dallas Cowboys, the America's team. Well, you got to win one before your America's team, although right. Dallas is still a blue blood program, had sniffed a Super Bowl since the mid-80s. So it still does exist. But yes, Eggs, back to the poll question. You give me one. You're giving me two. I have a hard time staying focused on two of them because then I pick the game I want more or the better quarterback play or better football. And if you're getting two good football games, then you're not sure which one to tune into, even if you got five TVs at the house.
Right. I love watching, especially football. I watch a lot of college basketball. I don't watch much NBA because it's just rough. But Thursday night, you have a game. Friday night, I go watch two games because of high school, because my nephews play freshman, and then my little cousins are the varsity quarterback, and one's the wide receiver corner. So, and they're one of the top teams in Illinois. So I go watch them every week. Saturday morning, wake up. If I'm not at a volleyball tournament, I'm watching college football all day long. And then, boom, Sunday, I might have my boys' game in the morning. Then I'm watching NFL all day. By Monday night, I kind of just want to sit back and watch one Monday night game and not have to worry about, oh, Josh Allen is sucking against the Falcons and they're about to lose to a team that just lost 30-0 to the damn Panthers.
Segs, think about it. The truth is, you said
Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels going head to head. It's just insane.
Let's call it like we see it. I'm burned out by Monday night, dude.
Yes.
I need lighter 100%. Lifting on Monday. I need lighter lifting on Monday night. You got Michael Penix trying to make an impact. You got Josh Allen, who's dressed as in a phone booth with an S on his chest until the Falcons decided to put a stop to that for one game. I guess I don't want to face him next week because he might put the wrath on somebody, right? But we thought they'd put it on Atlanta because it's crazy. Right. And then you got the other game, two young quarterbacks. I want to see those cats too. I need like you gave me a gummy, even though I'm going to sit back and I'm just relaxed, dude. Don't make me work too hard on Monday night because I truly am. If you had an NFL game on Tuesday, I would not watch it.
No,
that's how burned out I would. That's a bit hyperbolic. You get the point. I wouldn't watch it as intently. I could find something else to do. Give me a movie. Fuck, I've had it.
Yes.
Because I've seen it. I've analyzed it up and down, all the stuff. And some guys will go on there and act like they watched 32 games, four quarters each. Would you please stop it? No, you didn't. And you ain't watching a 1-5 team unless you're own. And by then you're turning your TV off because you can't stomach the end of the winless Jets. Okay. So then you're watching some other team to kick their ass, even if you're not watching them. So I'm with you. Emphatic. No, too much. And it's the ultimate. Can you see it's a money grab and we know it. And then they're going to tell you we care about player safety. Sure you do.
Right.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Well, speaking of Monday Night Football, Falcons beat the Bills 24-14. Josh Allen was not great in this game. He did not have the S on his chest. They ran the ball well. They ran the ball for over 5 yards a carry, the Bills did. But yet the Falcons continued to make a play when they needed it most. And Michael Penix, Drake London's fantastic. He was the only wide receiver to catch a ball on the Falcons. It was all Pitts. Bijan Robinson is starting to get closer and closer to Saquon Barkley.
Bijan Robinson is the reason you take a running back in the first round when you normally don't want to take one in the first round. Right.
Yes. Great player. So, it's just, I just don't know what to think about the NFL anymore. Cause it's like, as soon as you have it figured out, the Ravens are 1-5. The Bills lose 2 straight. The Chiefs look like they're just trash. And then all of a sudden they're really good again by beating the Lions in another good team. It's just like, I know it's the NFL. I know everybody's a pro. So any team can beat any team on any given day. But man, when we talk about we throw out our bets, what we would take, and then we're wrong. It's just like, this is tough. This is tough to analyze because you don't know what the hell is going to happen from week to week. And that's why you can't just react and say, oh, the Bills beat the Chiefs. They are the best team ever in 1 week, and they're winning the Super Bowl hands down no matter what. Then they lose to the Falcons 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, and you're like, well, this team isn't very good. You got to just slowly come along with the season and just let it build itself, basically.
Yeah, say that. Last night in that game, I loved the way Atlanta changed their looks defensively from blitz to zone to blitz. They were confusion was the story of the game for me last night, yeah, defensively for them. And on the other side of it, and they did. They made a couple times Josh Allen looked at – he just – the one where he got bear hugged, it was like the play in. I mean, you get to a point where you're like, we got no shot. I mean, they caved it and did a nice job. Regardless of sack yards and all that, I've always said pressures and different looks and confusion, even if they don't lead up to sacks, they lead up to interceptions, stuff yep. that you don't see that guy doing very often. That's one. And on the other side, Segs had some big plays. And obviously, Bijan Robinson gives you both in the running game and the passing yeah. game. And they took advantage of it, but looked like an elite defense last night. And Buffalo looked average. In truth, they did. And once again, Segs, it comes to tell you, if you can control the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball and you can make a few big plays, you got a chance to beat anybody. And I'm going to say it loud. I don't care what anybody says. We got to stop each week, the whole world, saying that's a great team or that's the best team in the league. Because I can tell you right now, I don't know who the best. Right now, if you said, Sean, pick the Super Bowl. It's the friggin' Indianapolis Colts and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. If they've we're going by best teams 6 weeks consistently, that's a they have. And so, well, that come on, this team's better. Well, are they? The 49ers, well, good. Well, then you prove it. I just know when they've got down, they found a way to come back. They've played bad and still won. They've played good and dominated. I'm talking about both teams.
Yeah.
And they're doing it all the same. Home run hitters are playing a really good play at running back. They've had, and well, quite frankly, Tampa's doing it with a beat down wide receiver roster. And he goes back to what I say. You can disagree with me all you want. Great players, great quarterbacks elevate play. Your fifth and sixth receiver come in. They ain't supposed to dominate a game. And he's making it to the point where they're getting involved and comfortable to where, hell, you're going to have an embarrassment of riches when everybody on that wide receiver corps is healthy because Mayfield has taken everybody and making them play better. So we don't have a great team in the league. The two best for my life week to week have been the Colts and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, you can look at schedule and, well, the Rams are going to – well, the Rams maybe – what's Puka's situation? I mean, things are going to change, and they right. change quickly. Look at the 49ers begging for an edge rusher. The Chargers, man, they need running back. I mean, they need some stuff in the back. I mean, people getting hurt. We don't have a great team, Segs. We don't. Because I can tell you right now, the Colts run into the Texans on a good day. Texans playing defense. They may beat them by 2 touchdowns, 3 touchdowns. Who knows? So, for me – I don't have a great team, and it's not great football week to week, and we don't have the best stakes. We all thought they're playing, they're the best. Because don't look now, but Kansas City's charging.
Yeah.
But we don't have the best because if the Colts played the Buccaneers tomorrow, hell, I wouldn't know who to pick. I guess I'd say where they're playing them. But other than that, the Buffalo Bills, there's a couple teams we know can't win. And if they do, it'll be a lucky one. Teams like the Jets and that. But you're right. Atlanta gets their ass kicked by Carolina. Carolina beats Dallas. Buffalo then comes back and we think they're going to hammer. And Atlanta beats up on Buffalo. So the only two teams that haven't been beat up on by anybody are Tampa Bay and the Rams. When I say that, I mean Tampa Bay and the Colts, even with loss to the point where they're like, yeah, we're not very good. There's nothing that tells me that they have a glaring weakness other than injuries when they hit like Tampa Bay's receiving corps.
Does this concern you at all if you're a Buffalo Bills fan? Week one, you win a one-point game over the Ravens, who we have since figured out are not a good football team this season. So far, by what we've seen, they're terrible. Then you beat the Jets. Then you beat the Dolphins. Then you beat the Saints.
Wait, stop. That's three bad football teams. Horrendous. Well, and
with the Ravens
worse being in the league.
A fourth win, I mean, that's – I mean,
no, Ravens, so- Ravens. Jets, Dolphins. Who was the fourth one? Those three are pathetic football teams.
Saints.
Well, the Buffalo Bills are undefeated against four of the worst five teams in the league.
Exactly. And now you've lost to the Patriots and Falcons in back-to-back weeks.
People didn't think New England was going to be ready the first year with Vrabel, that they were going to get better, but they can't go into Buffalo and beat Buffalo. How dare you? And then you get beat by Atlanta team, who, like you said, got beat by Carolina, who's improving.
Right.
I know what you're saying. Is this a concern that they only beat bad teams and when they face good teams, they're getting beat, or average to good teams and a good team, they're getting beat? Sure it does. They're creating no separation in good games, Sakes.
Well, technically right now, the Patriots have the lead in the division because they're both 4-2 and the Patriots beat them.
Bingo. And I'm telling you right now, we talked about it a week ago. Don't look now, but if they're still playing this way, we're going to have them as a team that's not only a division competitor, but going to get to the playoffs. The New England Patriots are taking care of their early business so they can get people healthy late, which is a smart thing to do in the first half of the season. So, yeah, I'm concerned about it, Sags, and just think a month ago, they'll be, oh, that's the best team in the league. And you know what it comes down to? It's because a guy under center, when he's dominating, we just assume you can't beat him. Well, they've been beat two times in a row, and defenses have, I don't want to say figured out, but have done a better job, especially the Atlanta Falcons. And somebody's going to try to blueprint what they did last night and see how can we limit him in these plays and take away his legs and arms where he's not two-dimensional, at least take one of the dimensions away.
Yeah. Last night, the Bears became the first team since 1926 to win their last two games, back-to-back games, by the 1 point at the exact same score, 25-24. They beat the Raiders by the same
score. Who scores 25 points at a football game, let alone two times in a row?
Whatever you got to do to win the fucking game. That's all I got to say.
Your boys did it last night, guys.
So, you know, Jake Moody comes in, didn't know.
How about that performance, Sags, huh?
What, 4 out of 5 had one blocked on a low kick that he even said, like, that was on me. I kicked it too low. But they get the win in Washington in kind of a sloppy game in terms of the weather, rainy and everything. But Caleb Williams, DeAndre Swift, who was the MVP of the game, and the Bears offense, they took care of the ball while Jaden Daniels and company did not. Jaden had the terrible interception down in the red zone. Jaquan Brisker picked him off. Then you had Kroski Merritt and Bill, as they told us 9,000 times on the broadcast, laid it on the ground. Montez Sweat poked it out. And then Jaden Daniels late in the game, when you're trying to just put it away.
Can't lay it on the ground.
Just drops it. And just drops it. And I get it's wet, but it's everybody's like, dealing with the wet ball.
Yeah, it's an unforced error because nobody else is knocking it out of your hand.
Right.
And put him in a bind. And he's a great player. And he made some – he's the one you say, man, I see greatness in him. But in games like that, you just got to find a way to protect it, whatever it takes. And he knows it. But the Bears did more in duress than Washington did last night. I'm telling you, Sags, they're learning how to win. And I don't care. You may not like the numbers, but like 8.7 yards per attempt. They're moving the ball. I'll tell you what the Bears are getting also, some run after the catch too. They're getting some people making you miss. Quarterback make enough plays. Even though you don't like to kick that many field goals, you still came away with points when you crossed midfield, Sags, and you were opportunistic on their offense, forcing turnovers, and for the most part, you're protecting the ball. I'm just telling you, the Bears are learning. It's pretty as simple to me. Playing well when it matters. They have a dynamic, talented quarterback who's still got a long way to go, but he's getting better regularly, and I feel like he's more decisive every single week. Ben Johnson's getting his hands into it, brother, and they're responding, and they're doing enough at the right time. The Bears, the last couple of years, lose that game last night. Say.
Oh, 100%.
They lose that Eberflus game last night. Yes, they lose that game last night. On the other side, Washington would have found a way to win. They're doing stuff that you can tell the impact of a coaching staff, but the quarterback's starting to elevate. And when you can run the football, you're going to be in every game. I'm just telling you, you are. Yeah. And that's coming from a quarter. I love to throw it, but look at how did Atlanta do against Sags? They win. Yep. Bijan had like 230 yards, 240 yards total yards
from scrimmage. 170 or 180 yards rushing.
And Swift was a buck plus. Okay, yep. And you still have the dual threat of Williams' legs. As long as he's just not playing hero ball, Sags, he's giving you some smart decisions. The Chicago Bears are going to make it tough on you to get through the division. And I know you got bigger plans than that, but there's no coast there. We've already seen the Detroit Lions had to face a little of that already.
Yeah. I want to ask you this as a quarterback, because I saw this twice last night. And, you know, as a fan, you don't know who to really put it on. But Olamide Zaccheaus, who is going back home to play Washington where he had been a few years. But first play of the game, he runs a little stop route and Caleb throws it. And it looks like Caleb is trying to lead him up the field while he's stopping. He makes the catch and gets a first down. So we see that happen. Drive ends with field goal. Bears come back out on offense their next series. It's third and I want to say 8 or so. We see basically the same route concept and the same thing happen where Zaccheaus sits down and Caleb is throwing the ball up the field. And this time it's not caught. It's incomplete, and they end up punting. But that's something that should be talked about, obviously, in between series and figured out. But as a quarterback looking at that, who is that on? Is that on Caleb that you just got to hit the stop route, or is that on Zacchaeus saying, hey, I need you to keep going. I'm going to lead you into that hole.
Well, in zone segs, and right. I'm going to go back and look.
Just they were both sure. Zone.
To me last night, and so people, well, Sean, how do you know zone or man? Well, first off, if those guys are coming downhill towards a receiver, I'm talking about a linebacker, like a guy's running mm-hmm. to the flat and he's running with him. You can usually tell in motion. Send a guy in motion, guy goes with him, they're playing man most right. of the time. People are trying to change that a little bit on the NFL level at times. And that's why you send him in motion or shift, and then they do a double cadence. You want to see what they're doing. Oh, he didn't follow him? Okay, and now I've already pre-snap, I already know it's zone. So to try and simplify this and not get in over anybody's head, in zone, I'm not leading you up the field. My job is you run a stop route, a stick route, a hitch route. Mm-hmm. My job is to take you away from leverage. So, for instance, let's say we're running that stick route or a stop route from the slot of the outside, boom, up, stick route, 6 yards, right? Zone. We're going to sit down. Hence the sit-down part of it. And I know that I'm not being sarcastic. Right. The sit-down part of it, I'm expecting you to get to the zone, find some spacing. Like if you're coming off the line and the zone, the underneath coverage is running to the flat and the other guy's coming to you, to be able to attack the inside shoulder of the outside defender so you're getting away from the guy who's coming to replace him who's running to his part zone and to sit. Now, if all of a sudden I see leverage driving on the ball to your outside shoulder, my job's hit you on the inside shoulder to tell you to turn inside away from trouble. If all of a sudden I see leverage coming to get you inside leverage, right? And zone, all of a sudden the three deep corners driving on you, then guess what? I got to throw it to your outside shoulder to get you to turn. That's my job, and that's why accuracy is so important. Trying to keep you away from a big hit, but also for run after the catch. Even in zone, we're not usually getting as much run after the catch as obviously you're getting on a moving slant route that's you're staying on the run. Now, see, some teams won't do it, some do. If I run a stick route and they decide in the middle of it they're playing man, I should have a runaway for the player so you're not running to be covered. So if it's man, you're sitting there. Well, you know it's man. You got to give me a little boom. You know how we call the whip route? Well, you run up. You know if it's zone, stay. If it's man, boom, hesitate and run away because I want a moving route against man so you're not stationary. It's too easy to cover. But in both of those with zone, that's on the quarterback. When you sit down, I'm trying to body you with a throw to the shoulder that protects you. And that's where I'm telling you to run. If I'm leading you up the field, just like it, I swear to you, you're thinking about it. You're saying, oh, man, what happens if that happens again? And it does. This time he runs a stick route or a sit down, a stop, whatever they're calling, against zone. And he leads him up the field. And the guy's expecting the ball on him to turn and run. Now, in man, if it's one of those, yes, you go. But we're in zone because that if that happens, Segs, you see it all the time. You said the guy will sit down. And then he'll start to leave because he thinks, oh, I got to go. And the receiver and the quarterback right. throws it, and it lands where he should have been. And this is the opposite now. If you got a sit-down route, you're going up to run a sit. When I say sit down and it's zone, you sit your ass there. Now, if I scramble, then you run with me and go find a spot. But from the pocket, because you're sitting down, I got this or whatever I got coming in behind you, I'm not going to run you into the guy that's created. Like a lot of times you'll get a sit and a dig over the top. Boom, guy comes up the back or underneath coverage, jumps the slot or the player coming up and running the sit down. And then we're going to pump the dig at 18 yards right behind him, right? Now, in man coverage, I'm doing this, pushing up. Oh, I'm running away. We're creating double runaway where we'll get the guy creating big windows and you catch it on the run, go. If that ball's being led up the field in zone on the quarterback on a miss, that ball, if you're running a stick and a stop against zone, you sit. Matter of fact, coaches, like you see a guy run a hitch and a guy will run a 6 yard outside hitch, same thing in the quick game where it's just catch and release. And the guy drifts from 6 yards to 8 yards. And then they wonder why the corner comes and knocks it down when he had a 10 yard cushion. Right. Don't drift. When I say a 6 yard route, if I wanted an 8 yard route, I'll tell you to run an 8 yard route. Six means sit and we'll do it. Now we're starting to do on that corner inside. You see in the red zone, what's called a smash route, corner hitch. Well, now what they're doing is they're running a corner. Like a whip out or a stick, what gives you the option. You push inside corner and the guy sits down. And if we find out it's a man, then you'll just whip out and run away so I get another option to throw it so you're not running to be covered. It's like in the park. If you and I are playing Segs and they've got 2-on-2 and the one guy says, let's zone Segs up and they run to their coach, then you're just going to sit down. Now, if all of a sudden they've 1,000 with one alligator, two alligator, and you're playing man, whatever I give you, we're running away, man. It's man coverage because you're making it too easy on the cover guy if you're sitting during man coverage. So that's on the quarterback. If you're leading him up the field in zone, You absolutely cannot do it. If that ball, it's a lot of times takes what happened. That ball gets tipped on a hand and goes up and gets picked. A sit down is third and five, run to six, sit down. I'm going to belly with it. Anything else after that's a bonus. You can't be leading guys into play. Cause then you know what happens, Sags, the next time? Then he runs up there and Williams says, well, I'm throwing the stick route. And even though Williams the first time gave him, oh, I guess I'm supposed to go there if you don't communicate.
Right, right, right.
Next time he comes, throws right there. And the underneath coverage guy who was sitting there, you hit him in the chest. And the guy goes and runs and gives a pick six. So that's on the quarterback against zone. Say, you got to sit and the receiver knows it. You got to body him with it. That's just a missed throw on accuracy.
And that shows, you know, exactly what you're saying showed later in the game, that last drive where they went down and kicked a field goal. It was third and five and Colson Roveland ran a 6 yard exact 6 yards, hit him right in the chest, got down and got first down, was able to continue
the drive. High percentage catch it. And Sags, if some guy misses the tackle in that situation, you're thinking, get me to the sticks. Let's get this first down. And we're getting in field goal range. If I get run after the catch, secure the ball, get down, whatever. But I'm calling this to beat zone. I mean, now, that doesn't mean we're not going to throw the ball. There's plenty of times in two deep. You're running an 18-yard dig route, two deep. Mike Linebacker, that's a huge window in two deep. You may get a different coverage. So we're running there. And it also, if you sit there, Sags, you may go through this and on a sit-down route on the inside. I may go sit down covered in zone the first time. I didn't like it. Boom. Number two, the dig on the backside. Boom. And if I have enough, I may come back and you may be my late check down on a late stick. But that's why we're calling it to beat zone in a sit down, because they're giving you a little window. You don't ever want to run to be covered. And in man coverage, run away, the rule. And in zone, you sit until I tell you different.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. Well, that'll do it for our Monday Night Football talk. When we come back, we're going to hit perplexity here in just a second. But when we come back, we're going to try and do this every day about 12:40 Central, 1:40 Eastern, where we'll take questions that I see, a question from Isaiah that I like that I think would get your opinion on. We got a couple from Dr. J on Twitter. You can hit us up either way, anywhere you watch the show, hit us up with a question. We'll find it. And if we don't see it today, we'll ask it again tomorrow. So keep sending your questions. We'll get to them every day around this time. But first, let's hit perplexity, Sean.
I'm not a tech whiz, but I'm becoming one, or I'm acting like one now, because I got some help. And it's Comet. It's a new AI-powered web browser from Perplexity. Triple E will toggle through these things while I'm letting you know who they are. Listen, I'm just curious how many times, for instance, how many times do you guys spend, or how much time a day are you spending on your web browser? How much time do you spend clicking around online, searching, scrolling, typeless, endless tabs? Right? It's a lot of times. I know me. I'm looking for golf apparel, the resort I'm going to go at Christmas time to get good weather, all those things. The steakhouse I'm going to be at, and I need reservations. My buddies are joining me, and I need to make sure you send them a calendar. So normally we're doing this searching the web using AI, and we're like, oh, they pulled it up, but I need you to do more because I need to free up some time for me. Well, along comes Perplexity and Comet. Get the AI web browser from Perplexity, okay? It's called Comet. With all the time you're spending, let's save some of it so you can enjoy the fruits of your labor in some other places. It's completely changing the way we are able to interact with your browser. Using Comet feels like having a personal assistant living alive in your web browser that can actually do things for you across the internet. Yes, do things. You don't just ask it and they tell you. You ask it, you tell it, and they go do it. Man, I like it when people take orders like that. And it's great with Comet. You don't just give the answers, get the answers. You're giving them direction. And it's like a human living in your web browser. So you can ask Comet to handle tasks for you. It literally clicks, types, searches, scrolls, just like you would to get things done for you in the background while you go about your day. Comet can shop for you too, make reservations, book travel, summarize articles or videos, send emails. What a great cheat sheet this is, right? But in the right way. Schedule meetings and a lot more to make your life easier. Let me show you how it works. All right, as you're watching my guy Triple E toggle, Triple E, let's go and let's look up the five best Major League Baseball ballparks for food, okay? And or just ballparks, because we're going to make a reservation to get tickets, and I'm going to have them send it to my buddies, and we're going to go to Fenway Park if that's on there, and we're going to get it all handled because we have Comet by Perplexity, the AI web browser that's changing the game, to go find it right there. start to look, and they're going to show you pictures of the monster, or they're going to show you the food as you sit and see there, from Dodger Stadium to Petco to T-Mobile Park to Oracle, all these great places that you're going to get to go. So you got the Comet visual on your screen. I'm going to say it again, guys. This is the one for you to free up. And let's say after the game, you wanted to go to a Mexican restaurant in Massachusetts after you left Fenway Park. Book it, send a calendar invite, and an email to my colleague, John, with the details. That's what you're telling Comet to do for you. And Comet works. You voice over what's happening while the screen recording plays it for you. And bam, they're going to search it for you and send out everything that you need. It's really cool, right? So download Perplexity and Triple E, great stuff by you. Thank you. And it's I think we're all getting addicted to it, and you should too. Again, Perplexity, it's the new AI web browser that is changing the game, and it's by Comet. So download Perplexity and Comet by heading to pplx.ai/Sean and let your browser work for you. And right now, when you download Comet, you get a month of Rumble Premium for free. So download Comet with Perplexity's new AI web browser. And I promise this changed the game. I'm not real good at the tech stuff. I'm great now because I got somebody I can tell to go do it. And they do it better than I would as a live person going and doing it. So again, it's pplx.ai/Sean. That's pplx at AI. Let me do it again. pplx.ai/Sean. pplx.ai/Sean. Go now and take back your time online with Comet. It's changing the game. Great stuff, Triple E. It's so intriguing because I thought I knew about AI, and this just took it to a whole friggin' new level. Pop on in there, and I think you guys not only will like it, you'll love it. And who doesn't want more time? Get your online stuff and have somebody else do it for you. Man, you got your personal assistant living in your web browser. All right, Segs, we got question time, right? Bringing them back in and all the great
people. Just don't use Comet to ask your questions and get your answers. Come to us first.
Absolutely.
We'll give you the answers.
For this show, we'll give you these. And then when we tell you where to go play golf for the next month, get on, we'll say, here's one of five resorts. Go search it up. Get your directions. Get your tee times. And then after, you want to go to a movie and have ice cream, have them book you tickets and go get your tickets for a movie as well. Hey, this is my kind of party.
A lot of people tell us we are smarter than AI, me and you. I mean,
have you seen us?
I mean, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, come to us.
See, we're a wealth of useless knowledge. Yeah. Comet's a wealth of needed knowledge. Right, so there you go. There you go.
That's a great way to put it. Yes, every time around this time of the show, we will take a couple questions from our listeners who either in the chat here on our show or on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, we'll find questions there. So I got a couple questions that I want to ask. This one from Isaiah here in our chat. He says, why in the world were the Redskins, he says Redskins, Commanders, Commies, whatever you want to call them, staying in the gun when the rain started coming down? Protect the football under center, long snap, read, and fumble in the rain on the third down. The one where Jaden Daniels went to turn around and hand it off and just slipped right out of his hand. So do you like the decision to stay in the gun for the Commanders in that situation with the rain, or are you an under center guy once the rain starts coming down?
Segs, you know what's crazy about this? And Isaiah, this is a phenomenal question and point that I try to emphasize all the time. You know, you can go through all the bad ball drills and, you know, practice eggs, you'll see him getting ready to play and guys will be dipping them in buckets and handing the quarterback. It's a little different than when you got an edge rusher that's going to crush you. And so the stress kicks up and you can't simulate that very often like you would in front of 75,000 people on Sundays or Monday night. The craziest thing about it is it used to be when the rain kicked in, you're not getting a gun. The center weren't comfortable snapping it. You're too worried about it slipping through hands like we saw. And I'm just talking about, 15 years ago, since 20, whatever. Whenever this craze started, I mean, it all blends together. And now we're 180 degrees different. I don't know why you can't be prepared for both. You want to know why they did that? Because they don't practice under center very often. Now, think about this. You trust heels at five that your quarterback's got a better chance with water on the ball and coming back to you. And they're snapping it pretty firmly so it's not a dead snap coming back to you without spinning a spiral that slips through your hands. Now, and here's another thing. I got to take my eyes off coverage, catch the ball, eyes back up, or eyes off the front to catch the ball. So if they're shifting and moving, you can see how it'd be a distraction not only to your eyes, but hand-eye coordination catching it. Under center, I'm not looking at the ball. The center's job is to hit the top of my hand. Now, what they're worried about is bad snaps going to slide through there because it's coming immediately firm through your hands. So we have now gone from Segs, it's raining. When I play, get under center, secure the damn football because we don't want it on the ground. Or the center where he rolls it back, Segs, he's got to block a guy. It yep. slips out of his damn hand. You can never keep it dry when you're getting steady rain. We have literally got to the point where our quarterbacks and centers, well, Harbaugh's always done it. He gets under center. They'll do both. You see the 49ers. Teams will do it, but the majority, first and 10, getting the gun, we're running the game. It's become college football. And they're more comfortable. Stiggs, how else can you explain being on the quarter or the half-yard line and running four runs from the gun in a rainy day without getting under center down there towards quick handoff to the right. fullback or the upback and get it to your guy? That they literally trust through these teams, including Washington. And what's Cliff Kingsbury's background, Stiggs? I bet you Cliff hasn't taken 15 snaps under center in his life. So from Texas Tech, I mean, that's where he's been. And I get it, but – in these situations, can you believe a bunch of grown men don't trust getting under center, that the center can hit his hand and the quarterback can secure it and then go back and secure it and look it into the running back where gun got to hand it quick? All the things that can go wrong did, and it cost you. We used to – gun was once in a while. I don't mind getting in the gun. You can see coverage. You can see players split. I like it. I think it's neat, and I love it. You could still run the ball effectively. Now it limits some of the things you can do in the run game. But I'm just telling you right now, I would always say, if you're going to be in the gun, fine. But in situations like this, we're getting under center to secure the football. Yet they trust that they can get a 6-yard snap or a 5-yard snap, heels at 5, more securely and hand it off in wet than getting a center and quarterback to pound your top hand and you secure it there first. And you don't have to look at the ball, Segs. You don't have to take your eyes right. off coverage because you're just going on movement and the guy's pounding your hand. I hate it. I love the gun and I love it. But why you don't work on both and trust both as grown men in situations – It will always shock me that they're doing that.
Well, and the other thing, when you go back and you watch that play and you see the replay they show after the fumble of the actual fumble, you're Jaden Daniels. You know it's raining. You know it's wet. You know the conditions. You're out in it. And yet he still turns with one hand and tries to hand the ball off, and that's how he lost it. It wasn't like it was in two hands.
It's going to slip through. It's going to slip through a seg like that.
Hold the ball with two hands and hand it off. I mean, it's just crazy to me that we can't do that. One thing I want to ask you real quick.
Those are unforced errors that cost them a game, Segs.
Exactly.
Those are unforced errors that cost them a game.
Bears were able to drain the rest of the clock, get rid of the timeouts that Washington had, and set it up for the game-winning field goal. But something you mentioned that, you know, we've talked about on this show, I have a kid that's 10 that is playing quarterback, and I make my son snap to him, you know, both shotgun and his twin brother, under center and shotgun. What's your favorite way to snap a shotgun as a quarterback? Is it the dead ball where they're kind of just like throw it straight back and it has no spin and you can catch it? And a lot of these guys are getting so good at it, they almost hit you in the hands with your fingers on the laces. Or is it the spin back?
I've gotten to the point where I don't want the ball spun back there. Because when it's going, if you'll get – now, you say, let me compare it. When I held for the kicker as well.
Right.
And it's all spiral, dude, and it's coming back because they want it back there on time. And, boy, do you got to – say I've had to catch balls in the
– I still don't know how holders do it. I watch it. I'm amazed that they're just so – good at it.
Well, it's because we're athletes, dude. But I take pride in it because I never laid one on the ground, right? Never. And unfortunately, good size hands to do it. But I always, dude, you're like hypersensitive to, because if you catch the back end of it, it's hitting the kicker in his balls and you're screwed, right?
Right.
So the concentration, because David, Ben, those guys snap it. Dude, I'm telling you, they're snapping it to the point where 99% of the time, I'm being honest, 95% of the time, my guy David Ben, or wherever I was holding, and David Ben was awesome at it. Did I catch it? And it was a minimal spin. The laces weren't facing. Once in a while in bad weather, or somebody tips, you know, one of those things. But it was rare, dude. He's talk about a guy hitting it on the club face area, boom. But that spins, dude, it's coming. I'm telling you, it is jumping back to you at 8 yards. We're no longer at 7 yards. You're just inside 8 yards when you put it down. But boom, and you get it down. But you want to get it down so quick. And not only that, don't miss the spot for your kicker by that far. Because if you do, where I put my finger is where he expects that damn ball to be down. So we take that play for granted. I'm telling you what, it was more nerve-wracking than playing quarterback. Because you're like, how do I control this? But that part, now take it to the gun. and the snap. I don't want that with me because too many guys, because Segs, again, I'm trying to see coverage, but you got to naturally catch ball. That's why go back and watch Montana and Aikman. They'll tell you they didn't get in a gun. Why? They didn't want to take their eyes off coverage. They wanted to keep it so they'd get under center, and that's fine, and I like it. Nowadays, we're doing it. If Troy and Joe played now, they'd get more gun, but they don't like it because I never like to take my eyes off coverage either. I want to see, but just for that split second, and so much can happen. These guys are so athletic. For the snap, that spiral, it's too much risk of going through somebody's hands. Plus, you get that center who's got a guy beating on him. He doesn't realize real how hard it's coming off.
Right.
I like now, Segs. And then if it's wet like that, try to grab the bat. Some of those centers get stubby hands. They may have, the fat part of the ball is easier to slip.
Right.
I'm to the point now where they're controlling the, you know how they're controlling the tip of it?
Yeah, they
tilt it up and they grab the top
of it. Yep.
Damn right. And then they're looking around and they can actually bend the ball and nobody, as long as the bottom part of it's not moving, they can bend in the NFL and see who's blitzing and what the front is. I want it there because it's also easier to snap it dead. So I want it firm but dead, so when I can see it, it's not doing this. It's not knuckling, but it's the knuckle that doesn't – it's knuckling, but it's not – the knuckle isn't causing it moving like a butterfly. So I like it better that way. It's so much easier, Segs, to catch and secure than it is one of those that spins right through your hands or the center. And I always put respect on the center because they've got a lot of shit to do up there. I want to make it easy on him, and that's a better grip. Over the years, if I was teaching it now or my offensive line coach, I'd want him to teach grip on top of it, better for the center, easier for him to see and put his head up. And now you put through, and now it's just a dead snap. I don't want a lot of movement on the football.
Yeah, that's what I tried to get my son's
team. It'll take a minute. Yeah, it'll take a minute. Yeah,
but they still
change things. Yeah.
Yeah, they do the spin, and because I know the kid that's his center, and I tried getting it in the off season of doing this because that's how I snap to my son a lot. When we just sit and I just sit in a chair and just snap it at him hard, I do both now so he can get used to both. But just that, I'd like that dead snap because if you get a kid that can do it right, he puts that and your hands are basically hitting the laces when you catch it, and you just got to adjust a tiny bit instead of having to spin the ball or, you know, do whatever you got to do to get it. So,
and it's easier for me, Segs, too, when I catch a dead ball to take one half spin and find the laces.
Yes.
It just is with a spin. I mean, like you may catch it and you may be fiddling with it, and you almost can, when you're looking it in, you can feel because a spin, it's like a baseball pitch. You can't see really. I mean, you can't find spin in those things. It's coming too fast. Here, you don't get to see the spin. It's going so fast, you can't locate. At least I can, the laces are coming. I'm catching it right-handed there, spin here on the left-hand side. I know it's the little things, but those little things are the difference in Bears going down and kicking a field goal to win a damn game.
Exactly. And then one more question we have from Dr. J, our guy, who this one comes from X.com. He asked, we saw Brian Callahan get fired from the Titans yesterday, right as we were ending the show. That came out. We also found out after that his father, Bill, was leaving the Titans because his son was fired. If you're a team, now he threw the Texans in because I'm sure that's his team. We know from our time in Houston, he was always around. But if you're the Texans or any other team in the NFL, how fast are you calling that guy? Meaning Bill Callahan, the offensive line guru, who's so good at what he does, to try and just get him to come in as an offensive analyst or, you know, whatever you want to call it, name the position, to help you with your offensive line. I don't care if you're the Eagles with the best, one of the best offensive lines, or the worst team, say the Texans with the worst offensive line in football. How fast are you calling that guy? Or are you worried about your offensive line coach maybe being a little butthurt that you got to call in Bill Callahan?
That's the balance, brother, because when you call in Bill Callahan, you're saying, oh, I'm getting really a Hall of Fame offensive line coach teacher. He's one of the very best. And we're basically saying you need a little help. But you know what? How about my guy, Noel Mazzoni at UCLA, going to give a new – look what it's done for Neuheisel's play calling career. He's like a help me. Because you're new at it, you're young at it, and now you know what Noel teaches. So Noel's have been phenomenal. Hell, if you're paying attention to UCLA, I mean, people outside and UCLA and the coordinator job comes up or head coaching job, especially a coordinator job, and you're saying, look what he's done in a team that was putrid offensively. Right. Neuheisel's doing a great job, and he trusts Noel. Segs, this is such a great question because there's a part of me that says, I don't really give a rat's ass if your butt hurt.
That's
we're trying to win. But when you bring Callahan in, during the season, what you're saying is, put it this way, you better have a strong personality, confident offensive line coach. But think about this. The Texans, for example, the offensive line coach from last year was fired. His assistant is now the full-time guy. So he was the assistant for a guy there. The difference is he's an assistant waiting for his first time to be the full-time offensive line coach. You bring Callahan in, you're basically saying, we need to get better, and he's going to be here for you. It's a slippery slope during the season, Sigs. Now, if you have a guy who's confident, knows and says, you know what? Having Callahan here is only going to make my line look better. It's going to make me get a pay raise and make me, that's how I'd look at it. That's like a head coach that hires average assistants or because he doesn't want him to be too good to take his job. The smart ones like Jimmy Johnson and Dallas hire Wanstead and North Turner and all the great ones and Hudson Howe. You say, oh, I'm hiring the best because I'm still the head coach and it's a reflection of how good we are. And all those guys are going to go do their thing if they get head coaching jobs elsewhere. I'd bring him in and say, it wouldn't matter. And in a consulting role, Segs, where you're bringing him in to enhance and you want it to feel like enhancement to your line coach, but he's still got to be a strong personality. And if you're going good, Segs, you probably, it's probably easier to bring him in. Why? Yeah. I mean, if the offensive line, like if you're in Detroit, you know why? You're just saying, dude, you're really good, but another set of eyes to even get us better because you're confident to know I've got this thing going. Somebody who is a fragile personality, while the Texans could use another set of eyes and some more players up front, they are getting a little better, but I'm not real worried about the feelings. Just like I'm not worried about cutting a player if he drops the ball at the goal line and costs the rest of the guys a job. He got to do his job. I'm looking for, like coach will tell you, Segs, the job for me as a coach and a front office and a team is to find the best players every day, all the time, regardless of who's in front, to find the best players. The player's job is to play well enough that they don't ever have to go find another better player. That's and it, when you get right down to the brass tacks, that's what it is. So some thrive with competition, some thrive with help. I would sell it as we're just getting another set, like Saban does in college, Ball Hog and all the coaches who get fired to come in there and give more sets of eyes. And if you're the offensive coordinator and you can't take it, you better be strong personality. Screw you. I'm not worried about that, so I wouldn't worry about the coach. I want them to be in sync, but it's a fragile – it's a very slippery slope, Segs, because of the depending on how strong that offensive line coach and is their philosophy majorly different in their coaching or is their teaching similar so they can work gel together. I'm always saying if I can get the best if Philadelphia fired Vic Fangio because the head coach got fired, you're coming, dude. I need you as an offensive analyst. Right. Yeah. You still get your salary from them. Come with us because you know what? I need another set of eyes. I'm all for it, dude. I'm ball hogging the best coaches I possibly can. And I think it's wise when you do so. My answer to you is Bill Callahan, if he wants a job, should not be without job very long, whether it's this year or next year. He will be hired if he wants the job because he's one of the best we have, quite frankly, ever teaching the position.
Hell, even just getting Brian Callahan in the building is another offensive set of eyes to look at. You know,
Segs, think about what he's seen as a head coach now. Bring him back as an assistant. He understands that, and people do it all the time. I'm bringing the best. And Brian Callahan isn't a hack head coach because it didn't work.
Right. I mean,
it didn't work for Vrabel at the end either, and they ran his ass out. And he's a freaking great coach. Brian Callahan will learn a great deal from this, and he's going to be just fine.
Yeah,
he's going to be just fine.
We're going to talk some college football, but I'm going to hold off on Indiana, Bama, Texas. Let's talk about those games tomorrow. I think today we got to talk about Kirby Smart and the timeout/no timeout.
Not time sensitive. Those teams aren't going anywhere. Slaps tomorrow, so we can.
Right. They're going to be some of the best teams in the country. But we've all seen the video of Kirby Smart running down the sidelines. I mean, if someone wants to argue that he's not calling a timeout, I want to hear your explanation. Because it is clear as day that he's making a T. He is not clapping. He is not doing anything else. He is making the timeout signal as he's running down the sideline. So then what's the ref do? He calls timeout for Georgia. Well, then Kirby Smart starts yelling at the official that, no, he wasn't calling timeout. He was clapping, trying to tell them that Auburn is clapping, simulating the snap count because, you know, kids can't say hut or anything anymore. It's got to be all, you know, clap.
You mean but they won't say?
Yeah, or they raise their leg and let the defensive line know. Like, I watch this and I'm just like, why do you just give this to defense? Like, I'm watching the Bears or Same thing with Jaden Daniels. He does the same thing. He lifts the leg, and then you see the right guard, or normally the left guard, shoot their hand in front of the center, and then he looks down, looks up, and snaps. Like, every single time, it's like,
you just look down, look up. Yeah, at least we go hot.
Right,
it's like, look down, look up. I'd have the guy, okay, this one's on three. Give me three looks so that guy's leaning and you get the edge rusher off bounce. But some of them, quarterback segs do get into a rhythm.
Well, yes.
You get caught up in the game. So it's like, it's just like when guys call, okay, white 40, you hear white 50, yeah. White 50, same color number. You get caught up into it before you know it. You haven't changed up the snap count in 27 plays.
Right.
And you wonder why that guy, the left tackle, can't block that sumbitch who's trying to come kill you.
Yeah.
But yeah, so lift their leg, finish the story. And he is calling Dak timeout.
Prescott used to say, here we go.
Yeah. Here we go. Yeah.
And then it would go every single time. Like, what are you doing? But anyway,
Omaha, hesitate, snap, right? Omaha, lift, boom, snap. Okay. These guys aren't dumb. They can actually see at some point in time, you got to get it. Just, and Peyton knew how to change it up where he'd Omaha you four times, right?
Yes, or
what have you.
Right.
Yeah, when you get into that rhythm as a young quarterback, use the snap count to your advantage. And a lot of times they don't.
But anyways,
he's ringing up timeout six. It's late.
If you're SEC, you cannot allow this to happen. So there's this big, you know, Kirby runs onto the field to the official that's calling the timeout. He's trying to tell him, no, I didn't call a timeout, because he wants to save his timeouts, but he was able to slow down the play. Because if you watch the play, the kid that is clapping is the safety, and you see him looking over at a corner, and he just does like two quick claps or maybe three, and that's all he does. It wasn't like he's running up to the line like boom, 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 and then someone went off sides or something. So, I mean, the whole thing just stunk. I thought that Kirby Smart comes – he's still trying to say he wasn't calling timeout.
Well, look at the difference.
Comes off like an idiot right here.
Hey, Triple E, yes. Triple E, go back to the beginning of this. And watch when he comes right now. Watch how his hand is turned, and he's hitting it in the middle like they do, just like this. Now, you watch, and we're going to watch this, and then you're going to see – well, go – okay, see that? That's a clap. That's
he's trying to show that he clapped.
Right. Now, when you go back and show – when that's after saying I clap, that's the clap, what he's showing. But the initial sprint down the sidelines, that is a tap, calling timeout. His hand, you know, he needs a little more better prestidigitation, which is sleight of hand, because it was blatant and bold. I understand what he wants now, but I don't do give backs. Now, Segs, the only time when somebody calls timeout that I'll give him that timeout back is if the review came and they say, no, this is reviewed on the field. You get your timeout back. But you can't give givebacks, because that timeout may mean the difference in whether you kick, win a field goal, get an extra time possession, whatever it is. And you know what else we need to be able to do, Sakes? Novel concept. Roll the tape.
Right.
Review it. Get it right. Review. Oh, I did this. The guy's not paying. Referee's doing all this. Well, it's not, you know, on plays that aren't reviewable. Well, we got a great idea. Just like when somebody robs your home, dude. You got your camera. You got your thing out on your front porch. The porch stealing your Christmas gifts. Oh, yeah, I have it right here. Oh, that wasn't me. Bitch, that was you. Okay. Same day here. Bitch, what do you mean that wasn't you?
You did this multiple times.
You're sitting in front of my camera and you stole that gift. Bitch, that was you. Okay.
Right.
They know disguise. You didn't have a mask on. This ain't 2020. Kirby, is this you? You know how they always say things. Who dis? You know, who dis? Dis your dumbass, okay?
Yeah.
And I love Kirby, but hey, who dis? Time out. Who dis? Okay, big difference, okay?
Big difference.
Right. Listen, but Segs, you know cameras are on. Why can't you simply say, well, Kirby, you know the guy, we detect no lies. You are not the parent. Kirby, you were the parent. You were pregnant with the timeout, dude. Sorry to tell you, this is your kid on Jerry Springer. You called timeout, and then you say, "Come on over here, Kirby." I'd love it if you say, "Oh, you're arguing? Come on over here. Come and have a look with the referee."
Yeah.
What's that? Oh yeah. You know what?
Yeah, I guess I did.
It's like that guy says, "I was only going 55 in the zone," and he brings you the gun. You look at, well, you're 55, my 92, right? So it's blatant, but no give backs. It was blatant. You got to be able to stop this, Segs. And you know what? We always say the eye on the sky doesn't lie when it comes to showing tape. You should be able to review everything even with the red flags. And that's just review upstairs. That's just go professional courtesy to both teams. We got to do this right. Okay. Call down. You're the head. No, dude, he was calling timeout, dude. Then yeah. you're not getting it back. As much as I love Kirby, you know, you can't pee in my face and tell me it's raining. We saw it blatantly.
And this just brings up our point. And I think we've had this discussion a few weeks back earlier in the season. Right now, officiating is not good enough. It's not good enough that it's to the point that Major League Baseball is doing it where you can challenge calls and strikes. We saw a playoff game last night, 23 missed calls, 23 by the home plate umpire. That is awful.
That's the fact. Segs, you wouldn't get elevated to from the minor leagues to the major leagues as an umpire.
Right.
That's double A trying to get a job thing. Not it's the playoffs and people's livelihoods are on the line. You miss two, you miss three, you miss five. We've missed too many. I hate to say it, but you're the experts at it. We're not. You throw five picks in a game. You're the expert, dude. That ain't on anybody else. You threw it to the other guy five times. You can't miss him. And if you do, we got to give you help. Hence, we're going to give him help. It's the same thing here, Segs. I'm with you 100%.
In the NFL last night, I thought the officials were horrible in that Washington-Chicago game. I mean, they took a touchdown away from Chicago on a play that – I mean, you're ESPN. You're a multi-billion dollar company. Or you're the NFL. You're a multi-billion dollar company. How do we not have cameras straight down the line every damn play that we can see stuff that if Theo Benedict, the new left tackle, was lined up offsides, he was too far back, then okay, we can check it. But it damn sure didn't look like it in the game, and it took a touchdown away, and that could have changed the game and gave the Bears a loss.
So let's just say here,
I'm the
Bears coach, and I got one red flag left, and the game's winding down, and this is an important play. Right. I keep saying it. Hey, every play is like I was begging for the overtime change where both teams get at least one offense possession. You're going to automatically play defense, and both are going to end up kicking off. So you're going to play some form of special teams, right?
Yeah.
And when it came to this, I've been – listen, I got a red flag. Every call is a judgment call, pass interference, offside. A legal procedure is a judgment call. You got to judge if the guy moved or not, and if a guy's lined up in the neutral zone or if a guy's lined up in the backfield where it puts – so people understand, well, does it matter how deep he is? Yes, because what happens is that's how ineligible – if it gets too far back, right. Now you're only allowed – you got seven on the line. You can have four off. That would be five off and six on. So it's an illegal formation.
Right.
I get it. But whether it is or isn't, I got a flag left. No. Go review that. And if it's inside of 2 minutes, you have an obligation to review the shit because it's going to cost somebody. You got to get it right. I got a red flag. Throw it. I want to know if the guy's lined up. Go look. The guy lined up in the neutral. I mean, guy lined up to in the backfield. Go look. Either side, whatever coach is throwing it, you're for it or against it, throw it. And they go look and say, you know what? We've determined, no, he wasn't lined up in the backfield or he was. You use it. You get to keep the red flag if you missed it and they missed it. At least be able to review it. It's not slowing the game down anymore. You still have the red flag that you anticipated using at some point anyway. You should be able to review anything that's a penalty as long as you don't use eight red flags because we only got two of them and you get one back if you use it, one and a half.
And the craziest thing to me that we still don't have in 2025 in NFL and in college, and last night it actually helped my Bears, but that play where DeAndre Swift caught the touchdown, the long 55-yard on the sideline, that play clock was clearly at zero. Clearly, clear as day, the ball had not been snapped. The play clock was at zero. How do we not have at least one official with something on his wrist that is tied to the play clock that when it hits zero, it buzzes? So he doesn't have to look down, look up.
It buzzes his wrist in a wristband, a little bit of thing there. Buzzes.
And it just buzzes.
The ball hasn't left. He's looking at his job. You're looking at the center snap. And if that buzz is simultaneous and it's at the same time, ball good to go. Tie goes to the runner. Tie goes to the snap. If that buzz, then your head's on that, and that buzz hits, and that ball has not been snapped, you don't get the 1,001. They're almost on the 1,002 count. The ball snapped.
Yes.
To me, that's like saying that on a 24-second on a shot clock,
right?
That ball's in his hand. It hits zeros, and then he gets 1,001 and let it go.
Yeah.
You get that. It's the same. There's no different because if that play leads to a touchdown pass or a jump shot, you've never seen Steph Curry pump a 28-footer and it is still in his palm and they go up and they'll review it. What a novel concept. They get to look at it
yep.
and it doesn't leave a buzzer beater, leave his hand. Then
Right there it is.
You don't get the point. So I get to hold it and then bam, go. Yeah, it's take the foolishness.
I mean, it's clearly
and
get a
first
zero.
Down on
it.
Yes.
It's so frustrating that we have all this technology.
And they got billions, like you said, about the camera and stuff to find if a guy's lined up. What I don't understand is you want to get it right. So you're not really given the play clock, the time. You're given two extra seconds is basically what you're given.
42
right.
seconds.
So if it costs
Aaron Rodgers lives here. I swear half of the plays he's been against the Bears.
The ball is snapped after zeros.
The ball is snapped after zero.
Because you know what he did?
And then he's throwing 68-yard touchdowns over the top to Jordy.
He's manipulated the rule. He's done a great job manipulating the rule. You know what his thought is? If I snap it, if you go 1,000, they'll stop because they'll yell. I'm going to keep playing because I get that second and a half of leeway. And it really ends up being a second half, every bit of it.
Yep.
It even feels longer when you go in slow-mo and it's that slow shit, right? Yep. And then all of a sudden they take one bit of hesitation and say, my guy's running by him. Now, even if they go, oh, shit, the play's alive, throw a touchdown. And I'm not even talking about a guy in the encroaching. I'm just simply talking about some guys at zero, they look up and they're like, look at the clock, and they're already behind. Yep. So we don't give guys an extra – second on a jump shot, why are we giving them an extra? It hasn't left the center's hand. Why do you? Because every rule is set up for the offense. And I'm a quarterback, and I love it if it works in my favor. I just don't get why the hell you get, no, it's 40 seconds, or it's 24 seconds, or it's 10 seconds, or whatever it is. We don't say it's a 10-second runoff and give them 12 seconds. Right. It's a 10-second runoff. 8 seconds come off the no, bitch. Yeah. It's a 10-second runoff, not 12, and it's not 8. It's the same thing here. It's this. It's at zero. The ball has not left the center's hands. That is a delay of game 5 yards against you. Yes. It's the craziest thing ever. We'll fudge rules one way, but no, we don't want it. Why? Because we want our quarterbacks to have an advantage over the defense that we give them every week. So it's even more fascinating how defenses even can stop offenses these days, in truth, which leads to some bad coaching and some shitty football we've seen this year. So when you get a good football game, you're actually shocked, not the other way around.
Tomorrow, I have a rule proposal outside of this one that I want to throw at you when it comes to quarterbacks.
Okay.
And I think this is something that
a makes rule sense. Change and or this, rule you want it implemented is what you're saying. Change or implementation?
Both. It would be taking an existing rule and changing it a tiny bit.
Okay. Got it.
But so we'll talk about that tomorrow. But I feel like we got to talk real quick to end the show about baseball. Mariners look really freaking good. They beat up the Blue Jays last night, 10-3. I don't know if you're the Blue Jays after that game. You're just not like
building for the last two games too on the road.
Yeah.
On the road.
Like it's just one of those things. You kind of just look at the Blue Jays and be like, great season, but it's their year.
Oh yeah. And I don't know if anybody, dude, they may roll through the National League too. That's how good they're playing, because they can pitch their ass off. They got bullpen stuff and they can beat you deep and they can small ball you the way that, and you know, it's
big dumper just keeps it.
Oh, dude, he falls out of bed and the ball ends up in the second level. You know, what's crazy about this, the same thing I felt about Toronto against the Yankees, you know, when they were just mauling, I said, they're going to have a hard time winning this series, is the same way. And for Toronto, they got the Yankees in their building those first couple, right? Here Seattle rolls across there and they hammer you in your building. Yeah. And they get to go home for three.
Yeah.
Three of them. And they can end the series. And I felt, man, Toronto's kicking ass this series. How are you going to beat them? I feel for Seattle the way I do now. And it's even worse because they've now given themselves a home cushion after coming into your building and hammering your ass. I can see Seattle winning those game six, but I didn't think they'd put it on them like that. They are just playing friggin' great baseball.
All right, and then switching over to the NLCS, you're a Milwaukee Brewer player. You're in the dugout, last inning, bases loaded, two outs, Bryce Terang's up to bat, ball comes way inside, and he gets out of the way of the game tying hit by pitch. And then the very next pitch, he chases a ball 14
inches. It was a non-competitive pitch.
14 inches above the strike zone. Well, however far it was a ways above the strike zone. How pissed are you if you're a Milwaukee Brewers player, let alone a fan and whatnot, that this kid, I know he's young. I know he's trying to, he wants the game winning hit, but you got a chance to tie this in the NLCS. You have to just let that ball.
Segs, in the process of playing hero ball, he could have been a hero. Yeah. You get my point?
Right.
And you mentioned he's a young kid and he'll learn. The problem is he needed to learn during pregame warmup what to do. And just to have a common sense feel for just that baseball feel. Listen, you know how when you're needed, when you're with a buddy and you're in college and you see the hot girl that you want to date and she's hot and her girlfriend's probably a biscuit away from about 280 and your buddy loves the other girl and you're like, oh dude, not tonight. Take one for the team, son of a bitch. Take one for the team. He's going after the 12. And you get stuck with, well, and I don't mean the girl that's got a good personality. Let me put it to you that way. I mean, I understand going big. I understand going big, but bigger than me is a little bit of trouble. But anyway, and maybe they're thinking the same thing. You're sticking me with that ugly dude. They may be,
maybe.
We never get girls come back where, oh, I got to take the bullet. I got to go with that some bitch. And you get the supermodel dude or the athlete or the brilliant guy who's the valedictorian. Right. So you got to take one for the team in this sense. I don't care if it's 99. In a rib cage. You got to know the room. It really. Now, guy on first and second, I'm probably doing what he does, thinking I'm going to be clutching. I'll get the hero hit to drive in the run, right? But in the process of trying to be a hero, you not only weren't the hero on the hit by pitch, which makes you even a tough-ass hero because it's going to hurt, then you go and chase the ball out of the strike zone, which you go from hero to tough-ass hero to goat in a heartbeat. Just like that. And very easily could mean, it's not just one player, one pitch, but can change the course of a series. It does change the course of a game, though, too, doesn't it, Sakes?
Yep, it really does. And, I mean, just a chance to go up 1-0 on the Dodgers. I mean, the Dodgers are so good. Blake Snell, I mean, I didn't even mention
him. Stupid last night.
Eight innings, what, one hit? 10 Ks.
Was it last night? Am I losing my mind? Was it last night?
Yeah.
Yeah, last night. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm saying.
Yeah, I was watching.
Yeah, I'm saying today's only Tuesday. It ain't Wednesday yet. Blake Snell just keeps plodding along and destroying people. Guy was lights out.
Fantastic. Yeah, and it's just, it's a tough one to swallow because it was right there for the Brewers, and you didn't play well. You pitched well. You didn't hit the ball well, and the fact that it was still
right there in your reach. You were going to win a game you didn't play well enough in. Yes. You didn't play well and still find a way, which Milwaukee, quite frankly, has done a lot this year, Sex, right?
Yeah.
They, you know what I'm saying? They found a way to get things done. But, yeah, man, Sex, take one for the team, Sex. Be a team player, will you?
Yeah.
To the rib cage or in the sheets, you better take one for the team, Sex.
I don't know about the sheets.
So you're saying I was never that friend. You're saying you're not going to be that friend. You ain't going 320 for anybody.
No.
I love you. You're my good friend. I'm your best man at your wedding. But if you ask me to do that, we're no longer friends, right?
Yeah. You're trying to set me up with the big bridesmaid? No, just pass. Pass.
See, you're passing on bridesmaids in the movie. What's our girl's name?
Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah. Melissa McCarthy. Yeah. That's she's the one running around with like the 19 puppies.
Oh,
yeah. I'm avoiding those at all costs.
Better 19 puppies than 19 cats, and I'll leave it at that. So there you go.
Definitely.
There you go.
All right. Well, good show today.
Good stuff. Yeah, good stuff, man.
We'll be back and keep sending questions. You can send them anytime through like X. Just find our Twitter, my Twitter at Adam G. Sager, Sean's at Sean Unfiltered, the show at Unpaved on Rumble. Send it to any of us or all of us, and I'll make a note of it, put it down. I'll find it the next day. And at 12:40 Central, 1:40 Eastern, we will ask.
And they don't have to be sports either. They can have, have you ever gone big? What's the biggest you've ever gone?
If that's your question, we'll answer it.
Ask me the biggest I've ever gone. Go ahead, ask.
Biggest you've ever gone is
279. That's one of those 320.
a small offensive guard.
Yeah, but they were smaller when I was growing up. The guard was 240. Well, that shot. Yeah, 185. No, Sean, yeah. You didn't. No, not slot. We're not talking about the slot player. We're talking about the right guard, the pulling right guard, right?
A 2025 Georgia offensive lineman.
Then if I actually get pissed off and she gets pissed off, she can kick your ass. Give me that one.
Yeah, Caden Proctor size from Alabama.
Yeah.
75 at 6'6".
Yeah. Oh, and beware of the guy who calls you out on it, because he's the guy, you know, that guy who talks the loudest on it. It's like, oh, you call me out? And then you see him sneak attack when he leaves the fellas at the bar, and you catch him in the next bar, and he's sitting by somebody who he fed with a pig trough. Okay, so don't kid yourself. We've been
so yeah. Anyways, send us your questions. We'll answer them. Because obviously you just heard here that
we'll give you a reason to laugh at us and just get wealthy, useless knowledge and dumbasses is what you'll find out from us as this goes along.
So send us anything you want. Tomorrow we'll get more into the college games. Indiana, I want to talk about. Texas and Arch, what does that win do for them? Bama, Ty Simpson, him and Mendoza got to be the Heisman front runners right now.
I was about to say six. Have we ever been at a time when the Heisman feels so far away? There's nobody dominating where it's like, this is a no-brainer. I mean, those two in the front, Carson Beck probably wants to argue because his team's winning, right? But just how quickly it can change, and are we going to throw that freshman? I mean, it's pretty impressive, man. Got some good ones, but there's not one where you're saying it's his to lose. We don't have one that's his to lose right now. There's seven, eight guys still in the mix. That's right.
Yes. Yep. And then we'll talk about that QB rule change that I want to throw in.
I'm looking forward to it. I don't want to hear about it until then, Siggs. Yeah. I don't want to hear anything about it until then. So let's hear about it tomorrow.
We'll definitely talk about that tomorrow. Thanks to Triple E. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to you, Sean. Thanks to all our listeners sending in your questions. Keep sending them. We will answer them every single day. All right, guys, we will be back tomorrow at 1 Eastern, 12 Central. Peace.